This is the Home Health Revealed podcast. Hear stories from real industry leaders discussing topics affecting the ever-changing industries of home health, hospice, and palliative care.
Welcome to Home Health Revealed podcast. I am your host, Mike Greenlee. And like always, Hannah Vale is right there across the way from me.
Yes. Hello.
She had a cut-off shirt, and I told her that wasn't appropriate for this podcast.
Jean
jacket does make your arms look better.
Thank you.
That's for
You're
sure.
You're so nice.
You know, so there were some things going on yesterday. Some people got arrested, and we got to see their mugshots.
There was a high-profile arrest, yep. Yes. So he turned himself in.
Of course. But the mugshots made me think that if you got arrested, would you smile in your mugshot?
No, probably not, because I wouldn't be happy about being arrested. But then there's something about having a camera in your face that makes you want to smile. So I don't know. I might grimace.
I think I'd smile.
Would you?
Yeah, because you're going to throw it all over TV, and I just want to look good.
All right.
You know what I mean?
Does anybody really look good? Even if you smiled in a mugshot, would you look good?
Well, I think you could negotiate with them to do some stuff to your picture before they release it to everybody.
Oh, clearly. Yeah, there's an editor on staff there to take out your lines. And
have you ever been arrested?
No, I haven't.
Huh.
Have you? Life goals.
I've been contained. That's not the same.
Oh, did you have handcuffs on, though?
I did have bracelets on that connected, yes.
Yeah.
But it was back in college. I threw a little shindig party. I was a social chair for Sigma Nu and threw a big party. This is years ago. And the bike cops came rolling up in their little bikes.
Is it on Google?
I won the ability. They gave me the option to sit on the curb with my new bracelets until the party was broken up. And then they took the bracelets back. So I was contained. That was it.
So it was really just like a lending situation for the bracelets that you wanted to wear.
Yeah. I may have peed my pants a little bit, though. I was a little nervous.
I know I would have.
Can I say that on the podcast?
Probably not, but okay.
Okay. All right.
We have a great podcast. We should probably get along with the podcast too. That has nothing to do with a mugshot or wearing lended bracelets.
All right. Who we got on today?
Thank goodness. So today's podcast is brought to you by HealthRev Partners. Grow your agency and expand your mission with a high-power revenue cycle management partner. Powered by Velocity, the most advanced coding and billing software in the market for transparency, analytics, and clinical intelligence.
Got it done, right?
Great. Yep. All right. Well, joining us today is the CEO and founder of Evoke Greatness, former COO of Bristol Hospice, and esteemed merger and acquisition expert, Sunny Linebarger. Go ahead and start with telling us about your experience and getting us up to speed with who you are.
Yeah, absolutely. So as you mentioned, I have spent a lot of time in the hospice space. I started out my career as a hospice nurse and went in bedside care and then grew my way up for the last 4 years, was the chief operating officer for Bristol Hospice. So lots of mergers and acquisitions under my belt. Probably 50 in my career thus far. And so learned a lot of the ins and outs and what to do, and more importantly, what not do along the way. And so today I started my own company called Evoke Greatness, where I do hospice consulting as well as executive coaching and keynote speaking. And so I really kind of took all those passions and talents and brought them with me to start my own company to serve more organizations and leaders in a more meaningful way.
Yeah. Now, did you say you've done 50? 50?
Yeah, 50. Well, we did in the four years I was with Bristol, we did 33 instead of that period of time alone.
So can you give us an overview of what it's like after, like they call it the post-acquisition integration. I can't believe I said that right. That was the one I was
Congrats.
Worried about. Yeah,
I was
nervous. Tell us a little bit about that. What is that all about?
Yeah. So after you've inked the deal and you are ready to bring two or more companies together, and that's where really all the chips start falling, right? For all the details, there should have been a lot of planning that went into that kind of pre-acquisition phase. And then it's really about executing. And so that looks like mapping out a really thorough plan around kind of assessment of the organization that you're bringing on. What does their culture look like? What does their staffing and their people look like? You know, you're trying to avoid duplication of roles. You're wanting to communicate really, really well along the way, because what most people don't understand when doing an acquisition is there is a high level of emotionality around that, right? Everybody just got shocked, mm-hmm. You know, outside of a few probably key leaders who may have been a part of the process along the way. everybody's really surprised by that. And I think when people don't know what to expect, they create a story in their mind. There's a lot of fear, the ground doesn't feel solid beneath them, and so everybody's wondering if they're going to have a job. So you're dealing with an emotionality component of things, and you're trying to execute on the deliverables of needing to ensure that you capture synergy. And so a lot goes into that. Ideally, you have a project plan completely put together where you can map out the details of those things. But probably one of the most important things is communicating along the way with the new company.
Yeah. So does
and
it,
making sure.
Oh, I'm sorry. Does it really, do you guys talk about the first initial meeting where you're going to break the news and the importance of that delivery?
Yeah. I've typically been the face of that. And I really enjoy that piece. And I think a big part of it is typically when you have somebody come in, I've had someone refer to, I was waiting for the suits, you know, like I, for anyone listening, I've got air quotes, right? The suits, these corporate people come in. And then I come in, I've been a CNA, I've been a nurse. And so I've been all of these elements. And I think that brings with it credibility where people don't feel like I'm just, you know, somebody's trying to pull one over on me.
Sure.
And really walking through, but that meeting is one of the most important meetings as you drop the news, you introduce, and you say, by the way, your company is now under our company.
Yeah.
And so you are reading the room. You're trying to pick up on the cues. You're trying to lean into the things that are important to them. And then you're trying to give them a picture. You're painting a picture in their mind of what's going to transpire over the course of the next 30, 60, or 90 days.
Yeah. Is there other people that when you're delivering that message, that their role is to also look around the room just to see, hey, how's this being received?
Yeah, for teams who've never gone in and really deployed the news before, it's really important to kind of do a pre-call to let them know, here's what to look for. Here's, you know, here's how to say certain things in a certain way. You have to be very strategic in how you're deploying the news. Mm-hmm. And you also need other people to be picking up on the cues in the room. And so your team needs to be prepared with all that information prior to going in. And then equally as important is, I usually like to do a debrief after. What did you see? What did you hear? What did I not miss? Or what did I miss? You know, what was I not picking up on? So that we can really put all of that information together to make sure that whatever next visit or next call or next time that we're speaking with them, we're being really sensitive to those things.
In your, since you've done 50, is there a certain type of employee or skill set where maybe they don't take that news as good as others, like a role, like, you know,
sure,
certain
absolutely.
Roles. Yeah. Tell us a little bit about that. What's that like?
Yeah. So it's really interesting, the different roles. So, you know, as we look at primarily like the hospice and home health space, typically it is the mid-level directors. So let's say director of patient care services, usually the ED may or may not even be involved. So that may be news to them as well. But typically those mid-level managers, all of a sudden, they feel like any control they had was just yanked out from underneath them.
Yep.
And so all of a sudden, you almost see the resistance, right? As you're standing there, there's a defensiveness that's brought up, not always, but oftentimes. And then what's interesting is field staff, as you're sharing the news, they're typically thinking, what can I it's going to sound strange, but like, how can I benefit from this? So some of the first conversations are, you know, I'm supposed to be getting a raise. What do your benefits look like? What does your PTO look like? And so we try to take all of that from all the experience we've had and really start addressing those things in the town hall style meeting so that we're beginning those conversations. And then we're also allowing people to, like, it doesn't have to be, you're not on your best all the time. Feel free to express the emotionality. You know, we can rein it in, we can keep it controlled, but people should feel like, you know, they can feel how they feel.
Yeah.
You have to have people, I think, in those situations who are, one, very emotionally intelligent themselves, who are able to pick up on those cues and, like you said, really read the room. And a lot of times it probably is those mid-level managers, especially if they're good at knowing their people and also like keeping a pulse on that culture, knowing the way that their leaders think. I would think that's a really great bridge connector. And if you can keep those people engaged and pushing the vision forward, that's now becoming this collective vision, right? Because I'm sure all these things, and we'll get into some of this, how you integrate the people, the technology, and the processes, because there are a lot of intricate parts. Undoubtedly. And even with the best laid plan, there are going to be things that come up that you have to really use that flexibility, strategic thinking, innovation. Okay, this didn't go how we thought it would. You know, we maybe lost people we didn't know we were going to lose, or because you are dealing with people, you're dealing with emotions and feelings. And then that self-preservation of, well, I didn't want to be in this situation. And now I'm making fear-based decisions about me, my family. Yeah, all the things. I get it, or can think through it anyways. How do you go in with all of those pieces, how to retain that key talent and how to nurture that collaborative culture? Can you talk to me about some of those intricacies and what goes on in your head?
Yeah, to the best of our ability, again, prior to, you have this project plan that you're building. Depending on the size of the acquisition, if it's a really large one, you're typically only dealing with like senior executive leaders. And so you have less ability to really have the intricate details of each location. If you're doing a smaller one, that executive director may be a part of it. So then you have a better idea of like personalities and key leaders and things like that. So getting as much information as you can ahead of time is really, really important. You're assessing what that talent pool looks like, right? And so what are their specific bonuses? What are those things that are really important to keeping those leaders? You know, the number one thing you don't ever want to do is go in and say, there's going to be no changes at all, right? I've actually heard people say that. And like the hair on the back of your neck is just like, are you kidding? Did we just say this?
Yeah.
What I say is the number one thing I want you to know is there is going to be change. I don't want anybody to feel like there's not going to be change, but we're going to work through this together. And so I think it's really just like mapping that piece out. You're trying to figure out what their culture is based on what your company culture is. How do you merge those two things together? You know, you're looking at how quickly do we change? How quickly do we make those changes on technology, on processes, all of those things? And so what I've seen is times when you wait a really long time, maybe because they have brand recognition in the market. And so you're kind of apprehensive to change that. I've actually seen that do more damage than good. And so my rule of thumb is really inside of 90 days. That's why I like to create a 30, 60, 90 day plan. Inside of 90 days, we've really got the technology moved over from HR, from payroll. We've got them moved onto our recruiting team. From a technology perspective, we have them, you know, training going so that we can then integrate their data into ours and move them over to our systems. And so it's ensuring you have all of those bases covered, that you have the appropriate training for all of those people, and that you are then ensuring that they feel confident moving forward in it, right? There's always going to be the resistance. There's always going to be people who don't want to do something different. And so I often tell people, like I refer back to the book, Who Moved My Cheese? I'm like, I get it, guys. Like, doesn't matter how big your cheese is, it's your cheese and we're moving it, right? And so we have to understand that piece. And I think that as you're educating people and as you're getting to know people along the way, you're getting that buy-in, you know, you're painting that picture for them so they really can get on board and feel comfortable and confident moving forward together.
So you've got a lot that you're juggling internally. Let's talk a little bit about the patients. How do you keep the focus on the patients? Tell me what that looks like.
Yeah. So what we typically do is we have created something that we are making patients and their families and referral sources aware that this company has been acquired by someone else. And so we try to be really sensitive to how we word this, because it's not I think the worst thing you can do is come in and say, well, we bought this company, right? Nobody wants to feel bought. And so how do you really talk through, you know, sensitively the fact that we're bringing two companies together? And then your verbiage has to reflect that as well. And so we're, you know, I've always been really sensitive to the fact of ensuring that as we relay this message to the market, we bring those folks who are have a heavy hand in, maybe they're the ones that are touching the account. Maybe they're the nurses or aides or social workers, chaplains that are seeing the patients. You know, how do we get them to feel like they're really moving into a company that's surrounding them and supporting them well? And so we create some sort of verbiage, letters that go out. But that's just like notification, right? And then there's the piece of how do we not disrupt the care operationally, clinically? And that is, you try not to detract or distract people so much from what's going on. Like, hey, our patients should not feel that this acquisition is happening, right? And that's really hard to do because we personally, physically, emotionally get distracted. Mm-hmm. And so to try to provide as much confidence to that care team and really have them stay patient-centric when it comes to that care. We should be providing everything that they provide. We should be, you know, anything that they do at that point in time shouldn't cause a disruption. They shouldn't be being pulled into the office for a bunch of meetings unnecessarily that makes them have to reschedule their patients. It's those things that you have to be really strategic and smart about, mm-hmm. Picking up on kind of how, again, like a bit how the room is. You're wanting to talk to the clinical team, and how can you ensure that it's as smooth of a transition as possible? And getting their feedback is huge because then they feel like they're actually contributing to that post-acquisition integration piece.
And the technology piece. That's a whole nother dimension, right? Especially if you're dealing with possibly antiquated systems to continue the care with the patient. You want that to feel uninterrupted, but you may have technology pieces that play a part that make it complex. So how do you navigate the integration of IT systems and other things there on the technology side?
Yeah, again, a lot of that should be thought through early on, as you're letting the team know. And so you have the systems in place to be able to port whatever data you can from their system to yours. If not, we've gone to the place where we just hire additional staff, maybe it's data entry staff, so that they can actually take that burdensome work off of the care team, again, so it doesn't distract them. And so they spend X number of hours really just doing a manual entry if we can't do some sort of port, because there are a lot of the companies that are being acquired may not have kind of the latest and greatest technology available to them. And so there may be some manual things that need to be done. And so how can we take that burden off of them? Well, we're going to get everything in there, whether it's manual entry or port. We're going to make sure that as we go out, if they're having two teams that overlap, that can make it a little bit more challenging as you're splitting up patients and doing that. And so how do we make sure that we are bringing that patient onto our service, kind of discharging them out of one system, right? And so we almost double up on staffing for that period of time so that it's not one person trying to do double or triple work for their one patient. That's going to leave a really, really bad taste in somebody's mouth when you're saying, hey, welcome to the new company. And by the way, I'm going to triple your work for a little while.
Yeah.
Can you tell the listeners or explain to the listeners the different type of sale, being an asset-based sale or stock-based sale, and how that can affect what you're talking about here in terms of contracts and technology and all that?
Yeah, absolutely. So as you look at bringing on assets, you're an asset-based sale where you're bringing everything with, right? And so that may be whatever their contracts and systems look like, but you may be moving them over. And so as you look at that, it's a lot of kind of complicated things that happen in the background. But really, the idea is how can we make this as smooth as possible, right? That's always the goal. But there's a lot of background work, moving systems, moving technology. How are you looking at contracts? How are you looking even at relationships? Because that's another thing that
vendor relationships.
And so you're trying to deal with those and get as far ahead of them as you can. But there is a lot of opportunity for complications to happen, especially with vendor relationships, right? Somebody may have been with a mom and pop company or pharmacy for years. And then all of a sudden, if you have a larger footprint and you have the leverage with a larger organization, vendor organization, then you have much better pricing. And so you do have to think about those as you capture synergies. And so again, it's about that transition plan, like 30, 60, 90 days. That is literally how I try the verbiage that I use for people, that this is the period of time we're going to move contracts over, vendors over, systems over, things like that. Because it is, there's a lot of detailed stuff in the background that you have to have the knowledge of and the manpower for.
And then as far as training and development, like readjusting that new team, how do you measure success within this M&A?
Well, I think so much of it, you want to say, how do we, you know, maximize profitability, capture synergies, all the jargon term, right? Well, at the end of the day, there is a lot to do with culture that there's value in that is difficult to put a number on. But if you rush through a post-acquisition integration and you throw some things together or you make promises that you don't keep, you don't transition to processes or technology timely, then there can be a lot of things that are fallout. And that if all of a sudden you acquired a company with X number of staff and that staff is upset, they can walk out on you and the whole deal can fall in the toilet, right? From a monetary perspective. Yeah. And so when I think through my last role being chief operating officer, all of that really, that falls in my lap in my, you know, scope of responsibility. And so how do I make sure that I have the cultural temperature of that organization? How do I make sure, so you're really trying to meet with people and build a relationship early.
Yep.
That is a key, right? And then you are moving through that timeline, that project timeline, and are you moved over on systems and technology inside of that 90-day period? Did you deploy the appropriate resources? So that really at the end of that 90 to 100-day mark, are things flowing? Because like it or not, you're going to have about a 90-day dip. Just because everybody's trying to get used to things, referral sources are keeping a real close eye in the market as to what you're doing. Do you have a good reputation or not? You know, that can impact you. Did your sales force stay in place or did they get freaked out and leave? You know, all of those things, did your key leaders leave? And then that mirrors something to the people. So there's so much to think about, but ideally it falls down to those people, processes, and systems. And if you can do those things really well, you're going to come up from that 90-day dip and you're going to have things humming along. You're going to have people who are starting to get behind processes, learning new things, right? There's a lot of training that goes on inside of that period of time. And so you're mapping out, how do I make sure patients are seen, train people appropriately, you know, make sure people feel comfortable in their role. If there's a change in role, you know, because sometimes there's duplications, what does that look like? Yeah, I think there's a lot to it. But it comes down to people, processes, and systems.
So do you
and how well you do.
Do you have a story? Because we were talking about what to do right. Do you have a story you can share where they did it wrong? I love stories like this. Not that I like. You know what I'm saying. I just like stories.
You like to learn from them.
Yeah. So can you share one? Of course, you don't want to disclose anything. But I mean,
that's
like,
right.
Yeah. All right. Cool. See, that's Matthew McConaughey. Right.
The unnamed acquisition was done prior to my tenure. And in this, there's a lot of, like I mentioned, there's a lot of things pre-inking the deal that happen. You've got due diligence. You're digging into making sure that this is a viable business that's going to add to your business. Let's just say the diligence probably wasn't done as well as it should have been. And a few months post-close, somehow in diligence, it was that there was that this company was in imminent jeopardy of losing their entire license. Had no idea. Paid a double-digit $1 million for this. And if you're in immediate jeopardy, the whole thing can be shut down tomorrow.
Wow.
And so we had no idea. Had no idea.
Wow.
And you're stepping back. I'm stepping into it, obviously. I'm stepping into it, and I'm going, I don't even understand how it's feasible that we missed this.
Yeah.
And so it went from there where we had to deploy people to virtually live there to start working with surveyors, it was a monumental thing that we actually got it turned around. But this was also an acquisition that we decided to not change the brand or the processes or anything for over a year. That was the idea. It was early on. And so what happened as a result of that is these people held on so strongly to their brand, and it created an us versus them to the point where they would recite their mission in meetings, which was different from our mission. It had nothing to do really with our company. And so it really created a delta in culture. We lost a lot of people through it. We lost a ton of money. And it was one of those situations that I have pulled so many valuable lessons out of what not to do moving forward. But it was, that's one that is still pains me to this day. And you scratch your head and figure out how did some of these things possibly get all the way through due diligence and getting that deal completed and then misstepping.
Yeah. So I've got two questions for you. As we draw close to this episode of this podcast, which again, we really appreciate you shining some light onto the post-acquisition integration process. So what's the primary message that you would tell listeners that if they're going through something like this, what's the message you'd like to tell them?
I think one of the most important things to think about for all parties involved is really being willing to lean into what that integration could look like. There's a lot of opportunities involved, I think, for everyone. And so there's lessons. There are potential opportunities from increasing the volume size of a company, additional leadership roles that people could step into eventually. And so I would say for your patients, for your business, for your team, really, I would encourage everyone to lean into it. Unless there's something, you know, that you're adamantly against, resisting change can impact so many people that you didn't even know that it can impact. And it leaves this like resounding ripple effect throughout both organizations. And so, you know, I think people should really lean in when it comes to those types of things. Be open to what that can create. Talk about in a lot of acquisitions, I talk about the creation of a new era. And it is, how do we honor what this company has done up until this point? And then how do we step forward into the future together? And I think for people to have that type of mindset around an acquisition versus, you know, this is going to be horrible, it doesn't serve you, you know, mentally, emotionally, physically, in any role to have that type of mindset around it. And so, you know, I would encourage people to lean into it, give it a chance and see what it's like.
Yeah, because it can really be an opportunity for some people.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
For sure.
And if they don't stick around, they can lose that opportunity out of fear, doubt, anxiety, whatever you want to call it.
That's right.
Well, Sunny, I appreciate you being part of this. Now, my last question is a personal one. Would you smile during a mugshot?
Yes.
Yeah. See? That, of
Why
course
wouldn't you?
Yeah, absolutely. That's what I'm saying. I can't believe you wouldn't smile, Hannah.
I said I would smirk. I would grimace.
Yeah.
I wouldn't be happy about it.
Yeah. Well,
Sunny, depends on what I did. If I was a little bit proud of it,
that's true.
Smile away.
I'm just assuming that none of us ever should get a mugshot.
Well, I would just like to point out that you're probably the only one of us that's been arrested. Sunny, have you been arrested?
I've been contained. Contained.
Have you had silver bracelets that are locked together?
Yes.
No. Oh my. Yes. No, see? Michael, you take the take on that one.
Let's not use
contained
not
with
use
bracelets
different
on.
Contained with jewelry. That's it.
So, Sunny, if someone who is listening would like to know more about you, about what you do, about what Evoke Greatness does, can you tell us where they can find that information?
Yeah, absolutely. So you can go to evokegreatness.com, and that is my website that will give you background and information on what I do. I also host a podcast called Evoke Greatness that is on all podcast platforms, really talking through leadership lessons, navigating success along the way, being super open, vulnerable, authentic. And so would love for anybody to check that out as well. And then always happy to connect on LinkedIn. That's probably the platform that I am on the most.
Awesome. And nice. I have listened to the podcast. It's really good. I enjoy it.
Yeah. It could. So. There's a couple things I would do to her podcast to make it better, which, you know, like a guest, you know what I'm saying?
Right.
Like a VIP guest. Okay. I'm just being annoying.
I'm picking up what you're putting down.
Yeah. You're picking it up. No, I'm just kidding. No, Sunny, it's great meeting you. I will tell you guys are doing a lot of great things for not only the women community as leaders in this industry, which I think is fantastic, but just overall what you guys do for this type of industry is fantastic. And really, really grateful that you spent some time with us today. So thank you very much and have a great and wonderful weekend.
Yes, thank you.
Appreciate it.
All right, bye-bye.